We've got another bumper agenda election special tonight. Stu Peters is back on the radio. Has electioneering smoothed down some of his rough edges? Fortunately, Michelle Haywood, the new Russian MHK, joins us to keep Stu on the straight and narrow. After criticism of the Quayle government on last week's show, Minister Ashford offers a valiant defence of his colleagues. All washed down with a strident mouthful from former MLC Juan Turner. A few days ago, I caught up with Michelle Haywood and Stu Peters. This is the first time they've met, but their political differences didn't get in the way of this engaging conversation. Great to have two of the newly elected MHKs, and we thought we'd go for a bit of contrast. We've got Michelle, who sits on the progressive, sensible part of Manx politics, and then we've got Stu, who is the defender of the weak and oppressed majority. How do you feel? I mean, Stu, interesting to be on the other side of the microphones.
Yeah, we've both got completely reversed roles. The number of times that I invited you into the studio over the years to talk about politics, and we're doing the same thing but in different chairs this time. So it's great. It's fantastic. Yeah, it's a very exciting time.
And Michelle, I mean, obviously you're not new to politics. You've been, how many years? Quite some years in Portlaoise in the Commissioners.
Well, an extra year due to the pandemic stopping the election. So yes. 5 years in the end. Yeah.
So you've got political experience, but this must be quite a different world altogether from the Port St Mary Commissioners.
It's a different league, and I was only reflecting before we came up, I was talking to somebody else, and, you know, a week ago we were stood outside polling stations saying thank you very much for coming to vote and things like that, and then, you know, 7 days on, we've just had our phones issued to us and we're being set up on IT systems and inductions underway and getting loads of training. So yeah, it's a real switch.
And what would be your key core issues for the next 5 years? Have you got as far as working that one out?
I know there's lots of issues that come up on the doorstep, and there obviously is a need to strike a balance between individual constituents' issues. Everyone is talking about roads and infrastructure, and that has a big impact on everyone's daily life. So that's obviously in there. But there are some key decisions coming up over things like climate change and energy generation, which we've got to tackle, and we've got to tackle them soon.
And Stu, I mean, you're full of ideas. You've got an idea for everything. How are we going to fix the government? I mean, you to be serious, you had some fairly clear views about where things were going wrong with government. I really enjoyed the various election meetings I went to, and clearly you were expressing a view about senior civil servants. Is it senior civil servants that should be getting the blame for all of this, or
I don't know that blame is particularly helpful. I think what we've got to realise is that politics and government in the Isle of Man seems in many ways to be broken, and we end up with all these schemes that have gone horribly wrong over the last 5 years, and nobody seems to be held accountable for the fact that they've gone wrong. So I suppose I'm going back to the blame thing again. You know, we do need to hold people accountable, but I don't believe in a blame culture necessarily, because it can't just be allowed to keep on happening. You know, we've got a finite amount of resources, and we seem to be squandering them on schemes that every major scheme seems to go either over time or over budget. And to me, and to the people I was talking to on the doorstep, people are sick of it, because it strikes me that the Isle of Man government's always had enough money to pay its way out of trouble. And the answer is, yeah, we've got a problem. Oh, well, throw some more money at it then, because we've got plenty. And that needs to stop now.
And how do you stop that, Michelle?
I think sometimes it's that people don't necessarily understand the complexity of some of the big projects that happen. So, for example, when the surface starts coming off the prom, nobody actually had a clear idea of what was underneath it. And anyone who's ever been involved in a big engineering project like that, certainly one where it encompasses a number of different utility companies trying to work in the same space, would appreciate how awful it's been. And I you know, it was unfortunate that a previous minister said, oh, well, the public wouldn't understand. But actually, that's about communications, and it's about helping people understand. I know I've done some project work, and it was looking at the water quality here in Douglas Bay, and there were live sewage outfalls running onto Douglas Beach that have only been fixed now the problem's been up. They've been known about for 3 or 4 years, but there was no point digging it up to then put it back and dig it up again. So, you know, lots of things programmed into that work, and then it only needs a small thing like the gas main being in the wrong place to where everyone expected, and suddenly that's a redesign from the engineers, that's another little time slip. And when you've got something on that size, I think it's almost inevitable that you're going to have slippage on the project. But perhaps that should have been communicated, and along the way we should have had progress updates, and then people would be perhaps a little bit more understanding about where things happen.
And the other thing about that, though, is surely the promenade's only been down for 100 years or so. Why were people surprised at finding things under the tarmac? You know, surely everybody knew where all the services were, and yet they clearly didn't, because, as you say, that's where the slippage has come from, because people were finding things that they didn't expect to find. How did that happen?
Well, is it fair to expect people to know what Victorian engineers had put underneath the promenade? I
mean, well, and where the plans still are. Yeah, like, let's face it, you know, there probably were plans drawn up for those. And even when, if you remember back to the landslide happening in Port St Mary, once that road surface started coming up, even though the Iris scheme had gone through there and water mains had gone through there, there was still a moment of, oh, well, we didn't expect that to be in that place. And it was a tiny, you know, it was 40 metres of road that came up in the end for that. But even that, and so, you know, take that and amplify that 25 times across the prom, it's going to be, you know, a big project.
And is it, I mean, at times during the various election meetings, it felt as though DOI being the obvious place for people to throw stones and develop political agendas. It was actually convenient for most politicians, obviously not for Tim Baker, but for many politicians, having a department which was clearly struggling to throw stones at actually was a useful thing, and maybe the desire to change that may not be there.
But the fact is that the whole purpose of electioneering is to go on the doorstep and see what bothers the people in the constituency that you want to serve. And everybody was talking about schemes like that, the Liverpool landing stage, the fact that we've had to have two sets of flumes built for the NSE pool and things like that. You know, these are the things that people were really bothered about. 5 years ago, I remember interviewing all the newly standing candidates, and all of them talked about the public sector pension deficit. That was the big problem then, and government overspending on various things. This time, it's been state of the roads, the fact of the DOI, Richmond Hill, all the schemes that were started off with all good intent and all went horribly wrong. So, you know, all that we're doing is not capitalising on that. I think that would be unfair, but we're reflecting back what people tell us on the doorstep.
And was there anything that you were told on the doorstep that you weren't expecting? Because obviously with your radio role,
yes,
you've had lots of feedback over the years. Was there anything different that you
Well, discovered? I'll give you an example of one thing that really sort of stood me up. And I was talking to a gentleman on the doorstep, and he said, "What's your view about the health service?" I said, "Well, you know, my limited interaction with it over the years has always been fine. You know, I've always been treated for minor problems or whatever, never had to wait terribly long for an appointment. So, you know, as far as I'm concerned, everything's fine." He said, "Well, the trouble with the health service in the Isle of Man is," and he knows because he's worked within it for many years, "is the fact that all the people, all the professionals working in healthcare are trained and accredited to UK standards. And the only thing that isn't accredited to UK standards is our health service." And he said, "Do you realise that if we were part of the UK's NHS, our health service, Nobles Hospital in particular, would be in special measures?" And I was absolutely flabbergasted by that, because we've been told for years that we should all be proud of our health service and our wonderful professionals and our state-of-the-art hospital. To be told that Nobles Hospital would be in special measures absolutely took the wind out of my sails.
I think there's an understandable reason for that, though, isn't there? If you look at the size of the population here, we wouldn't warrant a hospital that size if we were on that population in the UK. And so as an island, we're expecting that hospital to do absolutely everything for us to a really high standard. And yet, to attract medical professionals to work in that hospital, you're effectively saying to them, you know, your career is going to take a little bit of a step back here. You're not going to see the same level of cases. You're not going to get the same level of expertise. And it's really hard then. We've got to sell the island and that profession, we've got to sell them a lifestyle here, and say, well, actually, you know, it's fantastic, look at the outdoor world and things, rather than a career path, because actually as a career bit, it's probably a bit of a dead end if you're a medic.
Well, back to the point earlier on about the fact that the Alleman government's way of getting out of problems is to throw money at it. You know, the Freedom of Information request that was done before the election that found out that consultants in the Isle of Man earn something like £70,000 a year more than their equivalent grades in the UK. And that is effectively a bribe to get these people here. And I understand the reasons why, that because they're not able to deal with the right number of cases to keep their talents current, you've got to do something like that. But, you know, we're not attracting consultants, for example, because they like walking holidays. We're attracting them with a 70 grand bonus.
And would you rather have no consultants or spend the money and have consultants on site?
Well, having listened to the chap on the doorstep, I changed my mind about it and sat down with a few people, and we came up with this idea that maybe you're right when you said earlier on that Nobles tries to be everything to everyone. And so we came up with a plan and said, OK, let's throw that idea out. Let's make Nobles the best general hospital it can be, and any specialist treatment goes off island. So we turn Nobles into a brilliant general hospital for the majority of cases that come up over the year, but we turn it into a fantastic diagnostic centre as well. So we maybe invest in some new equipment, new people, new training or whatever, so that the minute you've got something wrong with you, your GP refers you to the hospital, you go down there, they've got a suite of diagnostic services, and they find out very quickly where they need to send you. And, you know, if something horrible happened to my heart or my lungs or whatever, I think I'd actually rather be sent over to a centre of excellence in the UK than go to, and I've got nothing against the staff at Nobles, but, you know, a specialist at Nobles who might only see two or three cases like that a year. I'd rather go to somebody who sees two or three cases like that a day.
You're listening to MHK's Michelle Haywood and Stu Peters.
And the difficulty now is we've handed, you know, Manx Care has come into being, hasn't it? And I'm sure you went to the briefings like I did. And the message there very clearly was, right, this is free from political interference and you're not going to have a say very much in it. And you get bizarre things. I don't know if you picked up on the doorstep, but they've stopped doing, if you have a consultant blood form, you can't have that blood test at the GP surgery. So one lady I spoke to had spent £44 on a taxi to Nobles and back, where normally she would have gone the 200 yards to the surgery.
Is there a broader role, a much bigger, more national role for MHKs that perhaps we need to be focusing on? And maybe it is right, actually, that your role as politicians is to set the overarching policy, and then organisations like Manx Care step in to actually deliver the service, because they are the professionals and they should know what they're doing.
That's the way that I see it. And I think that one of the problems that a lot of people that I've talked to have come up with is that the pyramid needs to be inverted, really, in that it should be that Tynwald sets the policy for all things in the Isle of Man, and that then filters down through the Chief Minister, the Council of Ministers, down to the departments, down to the people working in the departments. But it feels the other way around in an awful lot of cases, the DOI, the Health Service and others, whereby the civil servants come up with the policy and they get their minister to then champion it to the Council of Ministers and then to Tynwald. And an awful lot of people that I've spoken to think that that pyramid needs to be inverted effectively to make the customer, the taxpayer, the focus of all the efforts.
I think we need to be careful there, because a lot of civil servants are experts in their field. And you take, say, fisheries in DEFA. The fisheries officers there are experts at what the catch is on the ground and how quotas are running and things like that, and at working out what measures would need to be in place to sustain those fisheries. And so I think you have to allow that there does have to be some drive from civil servants saying, we've noticed this is going on, we've flagged it up, and this is what we suggest you
Absolutely.
Do. And it's using their expertise. And I think one of the things you have to be really, really careful about, because the Isle of Man government is such a big employer, is if you sit there and saying, actually, what we're going to do is hit civil servants, that's a lot of people who are very unhappy with a lot of the candidates that said civil servants are going to take the blame for this, I'm going to slash the civil service. And there are people who didn't get elected, I think, primarily because they were saying that.
The word I'm getting is that senior civil servants are feeling quite demoralised at the moment. They're feeling quite disillusioned, possibly as a result both of the election, where they've all taken a battering, and also in terms of the way the last 5 years has gone. There's been loads of things happening, particularly with COVID. They've all been exceptionally busy. And being told words to the effect of you're all a load of rubbish and we need it's time you were paid on performance or get out.
Well, I think we've got to actually set targets for people, haven't we? And I don't know whether or not government's done enough of that in the past. I skimmed through the majority of it, but I read the summary on the Beeman's report into the DOI, for example, which effectively said, and correct me if I got the wrong end of the stick, that, you know, at the moment, the measure of success for the department is how hard everybody's working, rather than on the results of the work that they're doing. And that's complete nuts. I mean, mm-hmm. That's crazy. You know, you walk into a department of working people and say, is everybody busy? Oh, yes, we are. Oh, good, that's all right then.
And ridiculous. Sadly, I think as well, and this is speaking with experience both from being inside and now outside of government, sadly we do seem in government to be rather keen on creating lots of roles of introspection and, you know, checking and double checking and triple checking and perhaps not as many roles in terms of the actual service delivery. Would that be a fair assessment, do you think?
I think it's one of those skills that actually industry pretty much does as a standard thing, and certainly academia does in my experience, that appraisals are used as a let's set a target, let's see where you're going, let's measure success, let's have interim targets as well. And yet we don't seem to roll that into government. And appraisals are not about punishing people and beating them up for things not happening. It's about where do we want to be and how are we going to get there? And it's a collaborative working together. And it was one of those things that I'd really like to see is some sort of 360 appraisal going on. But you're right, you know, the CEOs in the departments have had, some of those departments are huge. They are, you know, they are managing several hundred people working for them. And they've had a really rough time of it. I think it is unfortunate that we think we're going to beat up on them, because the last thing that you want necessarily is to lose all of that experience and understanding. If things aren't working in the right way, well, then we need to work with those civil servants to change it.
And I was talking to a former MHK 3-4 weeks ago, who suggested that maybe rather than chief executive officers in departments, we ought to have chief operating officers. I need to research that a little bit more, but on the face of it, that sounds to be a good idea. You know, back to the thing that Tim Wool comes up with the policy and then it's made to work by everybody else.
Moving the debate on a little bit, are either of you up for radical change? Do you think that it's kind of tinkering around at the edges with the existing system? Which of those two approaches, or is there somewhere in between?
I think there's almost certainly a middle ground in there. I think there are a number of things where you can look at stuff that's misplaced within departments, and local government being within DOI, for example, is a classic example. There is absolutely no way that local government should be sat in DOI any longer. Dolgy ceased to exist, and it seems to be a hangover. The idea that we have harbours inspecting and registering ships and ship registry in a different department inspecting and is just absurd. There's lots of economies that we could achieve by working a bit more smooth. So I think there are some things that, you know, if I had my way, I'd shuffle around just to get those kind of smoother lines of communication and things. But the big problem is still that the silo mentality that sits between departments, and that impacts on budgets, it impacts on working together, impacts on data sharing, and that makes the whole thing clunky.
I've talked to a number of people who actually work within departments, and they say that this was going into the election campaign. I had a lot of presuppositions from talking to people on the radio. And a lot of them were borne out by people who actually work inside these silos. And they said, it's absolutely true. You know, it's absolutely true. Any particular day, we might not know what we're supposed to be doing because there's no overarching plan for what we're doing. And, you know, a lot of the people who are managing us are so busy trying to hold on to their sort of fiefdom that nothing gets done properly. But it's back to, even things like common sense. I talked a lot about common sense during the campaign. And things like, you know, it irritates all of us. My first day on the job, effectively, I set off about 3/4 of an hour before I needed to be in Douglas from Mount Murray because I didn't want to be late on my first day. And it took half an hour to do, you know, what's normally a 10-15 minute journey because there were roadworks on all the roads in to Douglas from where I live at Mount Murray. Things like that, it's common sense. If you're going to close a road, you know, with roadworks, you know, it needs to be done, obviously, but at least schedule it so that, you know, you've got an option And that never seems to happen.
So this was going in on your e-bike, was it?
I think your thing you're missing here is common sense is the most misnamed thing, and it's actually a rare superpower. Yes. And it genuinely isn't that much a common attribute, is it?
But, you know, it seems as though, again, the people on the ground set the policy on things like this. I mean, I noticed a couple of roadworks where nobody was working at all and a whole lane was coned off and you'd got temporary traffic lights at whatever cost that were slowing all the traffic down, making everybody very grumpy about it, and there was nobody working there. Now, I don't know whether they'd finished early, whether they were on a lunch break or whatever, and there were no holes in the road either in the coned off area. So, you know, at least move the cones out of the way and reopen the road when you don't need to be working on it.
The first and most important thing that MHKs do, and often when they are least experienced, is decide who the next chief minister is going to be. Made your minds up yet?
No. I've not been canvassed by anybody. I've been expecting for a whole week for people to come and have a word in my ear and see whether or not I'd vote for them, but nobody has yet, so...
Gosh.
Yeah.
That does surprise me.
Well, it's because we've apparently got an extra week over historical elections. Okay. So maybe everybody's waiting until the 9th, the 11th hour before.
Yeah.
Well, elections are next week. So, it's the conversations are starting now.
On last week's programme, I was talking to Tony Brown and Alan Bell, and we were all agreeing that this oft trotted out phrase of of course now the horse trading will begin.
Yeah.
It certainly never happened in the election for Tony Brown, and it didn't really happen for the election for Alan Bell. Both set their plans out for the future and said this is what I stand for. Either you believe in it, in which case you vote for me, or you don't. But I'm told that perhaps there's just hints that maybe some deals are starting to be done behind scenes amongst some of the potential chief minister candidates.
There's conversations going on, and I think it's at this stage it's the people who think that they might want to go for it almost, and I suppose like you did as a candidate, when you're coming up with a manifesto, that you go around and you have those conversations first, and that informs then what you're likely to put forward as your stance, those conversations are just starting to happen.
And there is an inevitability to that, isn't there? Because one of the other things that the former chief minister said on last week's programme was you've got quite a lot of people with limited political experience, so the potential candidates are likely to have a little bit more political experience, and they'll need to effectively go round and understand what the views are of the other candidates. But obviously they've been listening to Stu's late night show and they know exactly where he stands, so they feel they don't need to speak to you.
No, it's not that at all. I mean, anybody can come and talk to me about their desire to be chief minister, and I'll more than happily listen to what they say. I think I know who I prefer at the moment, but not spoken to him or any of the other people who've been suggested.
I'm just wondering where the dark horses are going to come from. Are there other people who are thinking maybe they will? Stu, Michelle, are you planning to be the next chief minister?
No, I think that's a bit of a step to go from chairing Ports and Merry Commissioners to being chief minister in one bound would be too far.
I think that social media would melt if I put my name forward to be chief minister.
5 years' time, what are the policies, perhaps, or qualities that you wish to be judged on by the electorate if you do decide to stand again?
I'd like people to say in 5 years, he did what he said he was going to do, and that will be fine. That's all that I want. I don't want any brass plaques anywhere. I want people to say, yeah, he said he was going to do that, and he did it. Good for him.
Michelle?
I think I'd like to be judged as having made things move forward in a sustainable way, and that cuts across. It's not just the green agenda, but it's in education and in union representation, in workers' rights and stuff as well. And I think it's some progress to that, so that we're actually driving a society that isn't limiting its own self in the future.
Well, I've had a real hoot. I do hope that we'll be able to get you back on agenda in future weeks.
Not quite Morecambe and Wise, though, is it?
Well, I don't know.
I've got short, fat, hairy eyes.
Do you want some tea, Ian?